podcast and Paper Wings show subscribers. I'm here with the most recent co-host to join the Olay Academy, Edgewa Ebeneba. Woohoo! But Edge to her friends. And our production manager, our angel ninja, the person without whom we would all be wandering around in a swirl of confusion and panic. Anya Marcos. Anya Marcos. How was that? Is that pretty good?
I'd rather you keep your American version.
Oh my God. How do you say hello, my friends, in Portuguese?
Olá, meus amigos.
Whoa, hold on.
What? Slower?
Yeah.
Olá.
Olá.
Meus.
Meus.
Amigos.
Amigos.
Yeah, that was okay. I can let it pass.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. It's an exciting time right now for many, many reasons. One of the reasons is the very first release of an episode of Escape from Art Jail, our new podcast from the Oatly Academy, the podcast about money, social media, running your creative business, contracts, bad clients,
all the things,
attracting art directors, self-publishing, like everything involving the business side of art is fair game for this new show. The show that, Edge, you are my co-host on this show.
Sure am.
And doing an amazing job.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely amazing.
Yes, she is.
And then, of course, Anya, as we said, you've kept the entire thing going and brought us here, in fact, organizationally and emotionally as well. It's a good combination.
I have a never-ending bucket of energy. It never ends.
Oh my God, that's good.
Unless it's don't eat. Then we have a problem.
But not sleeping seems to do just fine. You switch between Portuguese and English, which you refer to as Portuguenglish. So yes, we have an episode of Escape from Art Jail. We actually explain what the episode is about in the real intro.
Yep.
This is the intro.
Pre-intro.
Yeah, the intro to the intro. We're doing this because we want to provide some context so people are not shocked when they hear our awesome new theme music.
Yeah. Dun, dun,
dun, dun. We've been waiting. I'm so excited they get to hear. We've been so excited about this theme music for a year now. And it's so fun. But anyway, that's just the point is we wanted to create context because people are going to go, this is not Chris Oatley's ArtCast. What happened? So we're creating some context, but we also want to address something very timely. For those of you who don't know, CTNX is the happiest time of the year.
You've been happier than Christmas.
I look forward to this weekend more than any other weekend of my year. And it's November 19th through 21st. It is an animation convention here in Burbank, California, and artists from all over the world converge and have a great time. It's a very professional convention. It's very professionally focused. So there's a lot of portfolio reviews and job interviews and recruitment opportunities, networking opportunities. It really is an industry event, not so much a fan event, although basically everyone in the animation industry is a fan. It's not really as much like a Comic-Con, but yeah, a lot of the listeners to the ArtCast and the Paper Wings show and a lot of the students at the Oatly Academy will be joining us at CTNX, and a lot of them are working on, well, basically all of them are working on their portfolios. But Edge, it's not just about CTNX, right? We didn't want to just make a CTNX episode of Escape from Art Jail. We wanted to make something more inclusive.
Yeah, more universal, right? It works for any convention, really. You know, LexCon, GDC, Spectrum, anywhere that you're going to be getting lots of portfolio reviews from industry professionals, this will really give you an advantage.
Yes. We should make it clear, in case you haven't heard yet, Escape from Art Jail is, like I said, it's our new podcast, but it's available with a subscription to the Oatly Academy Backstage Pass. And this is a new premium service that we are releasing at oatlyacademy.com. And obviously, it gives you access to Escape from Art Jail, but it also gives you access to all kinds of other stuff that we are very, very excited about. To name a few, extended interviews from the ArtCast and the Paper Wings show, deleted scenes from the ArtCast, and recordings of the various art school Q&A sessions that I've done across the country and technically internationally. I did one in Canada, so I think that counts, right, Edge?
Totally.
And then, you know, of course, I'll be doing more of those in the future, or so I hope. People might hear these and be like, we never let him come to our school. Keep that guy away. And so we hope that you get a lot of inspiration and information and career direction from the Backstage Pass. And I should also say that the subscription works very similarly to Netflix, where you just subscribe, you get instant access to all of the content, and that's it. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. So you can sign up now at oatlyacademy.com/BSPN. And that is BSPN as in Backstage Pass Notification. Go to that link, join the notification email list, and we will email you as soon as the Backstage Pass becomes available. We are planning to launch on November 10th, 2015. So if you hear this recording after that date, you'll just be redirected to the enrollment page. Again, oatlyacademy.com/BSPN. It's time.
Yay!
It's finally time. It's finally time to reveal to the public Escape from Art Jail.
Yes.
And please, I hope you guys like the show. If you could, after the show, please go to oatlyacademy.com/EAJ5. That's oatlyacademy.com/EAJ as in Escape, Art, Jail. And then 5, the number 5. And let us know what you think. We're just desperate to hear your thoughts on the on the new show. Yeah, so now this is the official beginning of the episode of Escape from Art Jail. The weird pseudo intro is over. Here we go.
Time for the real intro.
Time for the real thing. Here it is. For the first time ever, Escape from Art Jail. Reno asks, how would you guys recommend preparing a portfolio for conventions? Our answer, create a flexible portfolio that you can adjust for clarity and adapt to unexpected opportunities. Today on Escape from Art Jail, Episode 5.
About getting our portfolio ready for cons, there's this big misconception that the portfolio, and I'm doing like finger quotes, is a fixed thing.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, it's permanent.
Yeah. And we see all the feedback that we're going to get as being for later.
Right, right. You expect to get portfolio reviews at a convention or a job fair. And then the whole time you're listening to those portfolio reviews, you're thinking, okay, like, remember that when I get home. Remember that when I get home.
Yeah, exactly. But there's actually some feedback that you can implement immediately, and it will be hugely beneficial if you plan for and take advantage of that.
Right. There's often feedback on the book itself, on the format of the portfolio or the layout of the portfolio. And even if you're not receiving feedback on the portfolio itself, if you pay close attention, sometimes the problems or the friction that you encounter during a portfolio review has to do with the order of the pages or the number of pages that cover a certain topic or category. For example, props or characters or environments or life drawings or whatever. And different studios want different things, but you can't prepare for every single possible scenario.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And so the fact of the matter is the portfolio, as Edge said, is not fixed, or at least it doesn't have to be a permanent thing. And then you're just trying to get all the notes all down and remember everything. Some of it you can implement right away if you design your portfolio in a way that is not physically permanent or basically impossible to change.
Yes, because the presentation is a key part of your portfolio and the impact it's going to have. And being able to adjust that on the fly is a huge advantage.
Yeah, you can go and have one portfolio review and learn from that. And then they give you feedback on something that you can change or do a better job of representing in the portfolio. Then why not change it then? so that you can get more efficient feedback. You don't have to wait a year or wait until the next convention or job fair to show the new portfolio. You can actually adapt the portfolio in real time and experiment with different things. So today, the real key point is that the physical portfolio that you take to a convention or a job fair, anywhere you're going to get portfolio reviews, can be far more flexible than we usually assume. And that most people assume. That assumption that I just talked about, the assumption that the portfolio is a fixed thing, the portfolio is permanent, the portfolio is done, the portfolio is ready for the convention, as in this is the portfolio that I am taking to the convention, that kind of assumption creates problems for us. And we don't even realize they're problems because this is just what everybody does, right? Yep. Everyone works feverishly on their portfolio. And then, you know, whatever, the day before you fly out to go to the convention or the day before the convention or even the morning before the convention opens, you know, the convention floor opens, whatever it is, you know, is your sort of self-imposed deadline. And that's logical, right? But I mean, that's the deadline in your mind. And then the convention starts and this is my portfolio for the entirety of this convention. And like we said, it does not have to be that way. You have more flexibility and freedom than you realize. And to deny yourself that flexibility and freedom is a problem. That's a problem that there's freedom and flexibility that most artists forfeit because of this assumption about the fixed portfolio, the finished portfolio, the done portfolio.
Yeah. I mean, a bound portfolio, like, you know, those self-published blurb books that we get that are all like pretty and shiny, those go out of date immediately.
Right. You do one piece that you like after that book is finished.
Yep. And that's it.
And it's out of date. What are you going to do? Yeah, make a nice print and just stick it into the book and hope no one notices? No one notices.
Yeah. Like, how many times have you arrived at a convention and then immediately wished you could switch your pages around?
Right.
You
know? Exactly. It's a big problem.
Or you've printed a book portfolio with like a specific cover image that's all pretty, and you now realize that it's not actually getting the response that you hoped for.
Right. Yeah. You don't, you thought it was your best piece, but there's a piece inside the book that other people are responding to much more strongly. And you're like, why didn't I make that the cover?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The permanence of the bound book traps you, and they look nice. They're beautiful.
Really pretty.
Yeah, they make your friends jealous because they seem so professional, but are they practical? Are they practical for the in-person experience, especially one like a convention or a job fair where you are going to be receiving a lot of portfolio reviews? And again, I think you will benefit in a big way from having a more flexible physical portfolio. And so we'll show you that there's absolutely no reason that you should be that locked down, that you don't have to trap yourself. Again, you have more flexibility and freedom than you might realize. Of course, there's also the money issue, right?
Yeah.
The issue of printing a super pricey portfolio. The Blurb books and other, there are other places that do it. I think Blurb is probably the most popular. Apple does it. They're even more expensive, I think. But yeah, there's other places you can get a really beautiful photo book printed, but it's so expensive.
Yeah.
And so with the expensive book comes anxiety in losing it or giving it away or anxiety about it being destroyed. Yep. And a lot of studios only accept digital submissions now, but there are still, at a convention or a job fair, there are still lots of opportunities to give your portfolio away.
Right.
And so we'll get to that momentarily here, but you want, well, I don't know what you want, but I think you want to make a lasting impression. And so our question to you is, would it make a more lasting impression if you had no anxiety about giving the portfolio away and never needing it back? For those of you that don't know, at least in animation studios, there historically has been a lot of logistics involved with you submit a physical portfolio and then they take down your information and you have to sign like a release and then they store your portfolio. And then in a year or something or 6 months, whatever, they do a purge and then they mail it back to you. And a lot of that has gone away, but some of those practices are still in place. And it's just so nice to be able to bypass all of that, except the release. You'll probably still have to sign the release for a lot of studios. I know Nickelodeon makes you sign one, but that's fine. I have been making portfolios. Personally, I've been making portfolios that I can just give away and I don't need them back for years. And there's just so much freedom in that. And just being like, no, this is yours to keep forever. I don't need it back. And that's wonderful. If there's a specific person or a specific studio that you are really passionate, you're extra super duper passionate about working for, then maybe you do a more expensive, sleek portfolio that is more personalized. And it's kind of a different podcast episode, but yeah. You know, the portfolio should be personalized to the studio. We're really not trying to propagate this idea that a portfolio is permanent. That's not the case. We don't believe that and think that you, every time you submit for a job, you should update the portfolio and make it, design it specifically for the studio to which you are applying. But that said, you might go even further if you're really, really passionate and willing to put in the extra time and money to make something super amazing. And in fact, Jen Ely talked about her portfolio, the one she submitted to Leica when she was still a master's student at SCAD, the Savannah College of Art and Design. She talked about this on the ArtCast in her ArtCast interview. And I was actually just talking to her about it today. And she made this box. And at the time, the only Leica film that was out was Coraline. And so she made this box with like these beautiful kind of weird papers that she covered this box in this really interesting paper. And then she put buttons on it and she had pink stripes in her hair at the time. So she would add a pink stripe to all of her printed materials. And then she had like a pink ribbon on the box with the buttons just to kind of, you know, communicate an acknowledgement of, and a passion for Coraline and sort of a pride in that. And then she said that she hand stitched something like Property of Leica into the cover. So now you might make something special. And she, when talking to Jen about this, she refers to it as a gift that she was giving to Leica. And she thought about it that way. She appreciated them and their work so much that she wanted to make the portfolio a gesture of appreciation and for what they were trying to do artistically. Mm-hmm. And obviously it worked because she got hired there. And also her work is amazing. It wasn't just the cool portfolio box, but that's a whole nother rant. But anyway, our point is, yes, maybe you'll make something a little more expensive. I asked Jen about it today and she was like, it wasn't that pricey to do what she did. It took a lot of time, but it wasn't that expensive. But even still, there would be some hesitancy to just give that to whoever shows some interest, right? That was for Leica specifically. So when you're going to a convention or a job fair, again, the theme of today is flexibility. You want to be able to adapt not just to the feedback that you're receiving from the companies that you're meeting with, but also you want to be able to adapt the portfolio for unexpected opportunities. Right? What if there's a company that you don't know about that maybe you think you might be a good fit for? Or what if it's a situation like you have at CTNX where people can pick you and it's like, hey, congratulations, so-and-so company wants to see you and you don't know exactly what they do, but you didn't hear about it until you get there. Yeah. So you want to be able to flip pages around and try and do your best to make that portfolio as good as it can be. Yeah, you might design something as a gift to your favorite company or favorite companies that is more elaborate. But what we're really talking about today is the adaptive portfolio. And you can do both and you should do both. You know, I recommend doing both. Be prepared for any opportunity possible, but also focus on specific places that you want to work and do extra special things for them. But today we're talking about the flexible portfolio.
Yeah, you want there to be as little friction as possible.
Yeah.
So that you can make the most of your experience.
Exactly. We're trying to avoid people ignoring us, not enable people to ignore us.
Exactly.
Well, you're at the convention or you're at the job fair or at a job fair at a convention, as is the case with SIGGRAPH and I'm sure other places, you're able to read people's reactions immediately and respond to that in a personal way. So take advantage of this opportunity to improve the portfolio.
Yes, because you can observe the results of your changes in real time, right? And then optimize those critiques that you seek after.
Now you won't have to feel like a jerk all weekend. showing the same portfolio around, even though you know what's coming in the next portfolio review. You had two in the row.
Exactly.
You had two portfolio reviews in a row, and they both said the same thing. And you know that there's at least part of that that you could fix if you could just change the dang book.
Yep, but you're already there.
But you can't. You can't change it.
Yep, and you're like, but I need to use this opportunity. But I feel like a jerk because I know what I need to do.
Right. But you're stuck here now. You're stuck here all week or all weekend. And then there, of course, there's the temptation to apologize, right? Exactly. To start apologizing. Okay, I know these pages are out of order. I know I need more characters. All of that can be avoided.
Yep. Instead, you can interactively implement and make the most of those varying critiques when you embrace the flexibility.
Yes, yes, embrace it.
So how exactly do we create a flexible portfolio? You have some tips to share, right? About like how you present your portfolio conventions since you've been doing this for a long time.
I have been creating flexible portfolios for years. I am not the most flexible human being.
Oh, so you won't be doing any back bends?
No touching of the toes, no yoga, but I do have a very flexible portfolio. For the sake of clarity, I'll tell you exactly how I don't apply for VizDev or concept art jobs anymore, but it hasn't been that long since I was doing this regularly. So for the sake of clarity, I will share exactly what I do. Mm-hmm. But we will also try and communicate the point of that, you know, so you don't have to use the same binder, for example, that I use. That doesn't matter to me what binder you use. I'll tell you why I use the particular binder that I do. And then as long as you understand kind of the essence of this and the point of it, and the point ultimately being flexibility, of course, then do whatever you want to do. And and you don't have to take my advice. You don't have to do it the way I do it. Really, what I care about the most is helping you to not assume things and not just assume that, you know, because something has been done a certain way or because everybody does something a certain way, that that's just the way you do it.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
So the first tip is to use a simple binder that enables you to rearrange the pages and change the image on the cover. I use a white plastic pre-bound book from Staples. It's the Staples brand. I'm sure there are some countries where Staples doesn't exist or doesn't ship. So I will link to that pre-bound book so that you can see it. And then I recommend using whatever you can get. But the thing I like about this binder is it is very affordable. It is actually flexible, as in you can roll it and put it in your pocket or something if you have to. That I don't recommend carrying your portfolios that way. But if you give it to a recruiter or something, it's easier for them to tuck under their arm or something if they have their hands full. It's lightweight. And then, like I said, you can rearrange the pages quickly and easily, and you can put an actual painting or illustration or character design or whatever on the cover.
Yeah.
And as I think we talked about before, I can't remember if that ended up in the blooper reel or not, but we were discussing earlier, not only are you able to move the pages around, but if at all possible, I recommend taking more work, more printed pages with your work than you have pages in the binder. And flexibility isn't just about moving the pages around, rearranging them inside the portfolio.
Yeah.
The flexibility is also about what goes into the portfolio. And I think we've all been in this situation where we're trying to put together a portfolio and we're uncertain about what should go in and what we should cut.
Yeah, exactly.
And so why not take more pages, more printouts than will fit in the binder. And then that way if you have a piece that you're going to try out on some people, you give it to them. Don't say anything about it. Let them flip through. Do they pause on that piece or do they just blow right past it? Maybe they blow right past it and then you give it to somebody else and they just flip right past it really fast and kind of ignore it. Well, try the other one then, you know, try getting rid of that one and try the other one.
That way you're able to change your portfolio images based on what people are responding to.
Exactly. And then in addition to what people are responding to, like we said, there also might be unexpected opportunities or you might, while you're at the convention, you might acquire new information about an opportunity that you are anticipating. So you might say Saturday afternoon, you've got an interview with Nickelodeon and you've put together a character design portfolio. Maybe you hear about a show that they're developing and maybe the show is an animals, talking animal show. And you have more human characters in your portfolio right now. This is a character design portfolio example. And you go, oh, wow, but they're doing an animal show that I didn't know about. Maybe they just announced it at the convention.
Yeah.
Good thing I brought my animal character printouts and go just switch them around, put more animals in, you know? So that's what we're talking about. So you feel as confident as you can feel on that day.
So this is going to be a little bit of a mini rant. This is a topic which like needs its own episode.
Yeah.
But we really need to address it.
Yeah.
And that's, please, don't load your pages with a whole bunch of mastheads and logos.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. Conventional wisdom is put your name very clearly written on every page, put your logo on there, put your mailing address, your cell phone number, every way for people to contact you, right? That's the conventional wisdom.
Yep. But we just want to see the art, right?
Yeah.
Everyone has a mobile device, at least everyone who's going to be hiring you.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. If it's a recruiter from an animation studio or a game studio.
They probably have a mobile device. In fact, all you need is a little watermark with your website on it because people will find you, right?
Yeah.
As long as you're keeping your website up to date, which you should be doing. That's another rant.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't need more than that. There's no need to crowd your pages and obscure what people are here to see, which is the art.
If we've seen your logo once, we've seen it enough, in my opinion. I don't need it huge on every page. I mean, logos are supposed to get attention. They're supposed to be distinct and creative, right? That's the whole point. And so every page that you put your logo on is distracting from the art.
Yes.
Right? If you're a painter, I want to see gorgeous painting and not a watermark that don't make the watermark hard to see, but not so visible that it's distracting. I've seen so many portfolio pages with these gorgeous, delicate life drawings, and there's this huge stamp of a logo and the big, you know, bold masthead, you know, Chris Oatley, visual development artist. It's like, I know you're a visual development artist. I see the visual development art on the page, you know, and I don't need the logo and the masthead and all that stuff on every single page. All I need is a way to find your most recent contact information. And again, you know, it saves you time and money because if you move or you change your cell phone number or you have to go print all your pages again.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if they're ones you're going to use multiple times, you now have to reprint your pages. If you just have your website on there, and this is especially helpful if your website is actually your name.
Yeah.
Right. My website is chrisoatley.com. It's very clear just from the URL what my name is. Right. And it's so simple. Yeah. So I don't have to do a lot of work to try and communicate that. They know my artist name and they know how to find my most recent contact information and more of my work, honestly, and more my most recent work from that little watermark that is as readable but unobtrusive as possible. I mentioned earlier the importance of being able to change the cover image in your portfolio. Go to any convention or job fair and you will see most of the artists have the black leather binder, right? Yep. Just the black leather book with the handle on it. And it cost them $50 or $60 or $100.
Yeah.
Something like that.
It's all default too.
Yeah. Right. And you know, it's generic.
Yep.
It's generic. It's a generic choice for a portfolio. And that is not what a visual development artist or a concept artist or an illustrator, a storyboard artist, an animator, a character designer, that is not the message that you want to be sending, right? You are supposed to invent the future of the studio, not be generic, right? And it's a missed opportunity. And that opportunity we're talking about is being able to stand out literally in the crowd. You know, on the stack of portfolios. And again, I don't want to distract you and start kind of addressing this issue of applying to studios, but I got the idea for this. I was taking a friend's portfolio to Nickelodeon. I was dropping it off for them and my friend had a black binder. Mm-hmm. And so I was taking the black binder and it was pre-bound, you know, can't change it around. Which I think, by the way, is not as big a deal when you're not going to be there in person, because you can't change the pages around. So it's, I think maybe
it's fine.
Okay then. But anyway, it was a black binder with no cover on it, just a black cover. And so I took it in at Nickelodeon. You go in the front door, they buzz you in. So that's cool. You just get to see the inside of a little bit of the inside of the Nickelodeon. So that's fun. And then you walk up to the guard desk and the guard is there. And then you hand the guard the binder. And then you say, I'm dropping off a portfolio for such and such show or such and such job. And then the guard says to you, you know, what's your name? Sign here. And then the guard turns around, opens a giant closet directly behind him or her. It was a man when I dropped it off. And he opens up this giant closet with this huge gray door. And there's a table about 4 feet off the ground. And probably, I'm trying not to exaggerate, but there were probably 6 or 7 stacks in a row. The portfolios laying down on their back, so stacked up like, you know, hoarders. And the stacks were probably 3 feet, 2.5 to 3 feet high.
Wow.
Of all these portfolios. And I watch him take my friend's portfolio and go over and just set it on the stack. No. And I just, something about the black cover blending into all these other black portfolios, it just made me go, I should do something about that. And when I was in art school, I did hear about making your portfolio look more interesting, just like Jen Ely did for her Leica application. I had heard stories of this before, just different ideas, but I never really knew what to do. But the thing that occurred to me right then and there is I should put my best piece on the cover.
Right.
If I'm not going to do something kind of clever with the case itself, I want them to see my paintings. That's what I'm here. I'm here, that's why I'm applying. I'm applying because I want to be a Viz Dev artist at Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
Or at the time, that was my aspiration. And so I was like, well, let me put my best Viz Dev painting on the front. And that's what I did from then on. And so that kind of led to this whole idea of the plastic binder with the interchangeable pages. And then, you know, I at some point early on, that's when I started taking more pages than I needed and going, oh, I'm going to switch things around based on feedback or based on opportunities.
Yeah, because the black binder, it may look really sleek,
yeah,
and whatever, but it doesn't say anything about what you have to offer as an artist.
And that goes for cardboard binders or wood binders or gray binders or whatever. It's just the black binder is the most common.
Yeah, it's faceless, right?
Yeah.
And you don't want to be faceless. That's not what you're aiming for. It's also a non-expensive option, right?
Right.
Right, you don't have to print multiple books with varying covers in an effort to combat every possibility. Because if you're going to do a bound book and you're thinking, okay, well, I need to be prepared for different opportunities, then your next line of thought is going to be, well, I need to print out multiple versions of this book, right?
Yeah.
And that's going to be crazy pricey, expensive and bulky, and just it's impossible to combat every possibility. But instead, you can immediately swap out your cover image based on the feedback you're getting. And as we've said, you know, swap your pages.
Yeah. And so I mentioned earlier that I print my pages and my cover at home. Uh-huh. Sometimes I use the iPad, but we'll get to that. We'll get to iPads later. There are all kinds of problems with iPads that you just have to be careful about. Anyway, the point is, I used to print it at home. Now I just print at Staples. Was that easy.
Was it fun printing at home?
No, it was terrible. It was terrible. It's always right before the convention or the job fair that your printer decides to start putting lines in the images. Or, you know, so many nights where I was up till 4 a.m. and it's like, I need to be getting sleep. I need to be resting because I've got to go, you know,
walk around,
dazzle people tomorrow. Yeah, exactly. And walk around and I'm not going to be able to eat very much. It's just, you know, add a sleepless night to that or more than one. That's a
recipe
terrible
for success.
It's a terrible idea. Yeah, exactly. Oh my God. And, there was just some point at which I went, no more. I'm going to print somewhere else. And then the nice part is when you're printing at home, you waste printer paper, you waste printer ink. And at most places, if you go to have the image printed somewhere else, you don't have to pay for the print if it's terrible.
Yeah.
If it's way too dark or something like that, you don't have to. Usually they'll just go, okay, let me just lighten it up and I'll print it for you again. You're not wasting your own printer ink or printer paper.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's an advantage in printing at home, obviously, in that you have more flexibility.
Yeah,
right?
So if it's the only option you have, you know, it's a feasible and affordable one, it may suck to do, but you can do it, right? You can pull it off. Yeah. However, it's just so much easier to get it done by a printer.
Yeah, exactly. So when I was printing at home, I did the calculations and I can't remember exactly down to the penny what that it was. I think that this plastic binder plus the printing costs, my own personal printing costs, and that is not including the cost of the printer, which was like $150, I think, when I bought it. But the cost of the printer paper and the printer ink, and that includes the waste as well. Okay, right. So all things considered, the cost of each book averaged out to about $6. I think it was $6.72, if I remember correctly.
Nice.
But it was between $6 and $7. Mm-hmm. So yeah, $6 and $7 per book, that gets expensive if you're going to give away 100 portfolios,
yeah.
But you probably aren't. You know, you can print 10 portfolios, spend $60 and be able to have a lot of portfolios that tell lots of different stories about you. And you might not even need that many. You know, I think typically I would take between 5 and 7 of them in my backpack, and then I would carry one.
Right.
And if the portfolio itself is kind of cheap, not of course, we want it to look professional, but affordable, clearly not expensive, then it's less stress for the person you're giving it to.
Yeah,
right. Because it's not this huge elaborate thing. And they're like, oh my God, I hope I don't spill coffee on this. It's like, whatever, spill coffee on it, throw it away. I don't care. You know, it's like, this is just a way I'm just trying to connect with you. I just want you to have my work come what may.
Yeah.
And it's just no stress, you know, just no stress except that $6.
Yes.
And I think that's, to me, that was worth it. That was how I struck that balance. I was like, $6 and some change. Okay. That is the perfect balance to me.
Mm-hmm. It's not like a huge heavy book that you're dumping on them that they'll need to carry around with them and figure out how the hell they're going to pack it and take it home with them.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, it's great. It's not creating friction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, you can carry multiple copies, like we've been saying. Like, you can't carry like 10 large heavy books in your backpack.
Right.
Unless you're really, 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 really strong.
And when I say I had 5 or 7 portfolios in my backpack, for me, that was more of a TV-focused portfolio and more of a feature-focused portfolio. And by that, I mean the one portfolio was more drawing, more stuff with lines, more cartoony, flat graphic characters, stuff that you might see on Nickelodeon or Cartoon Network. And then in my feature portfolio, I had a lot more painting. Oftentimes I would have more life drawing, zoo drawings, that kind of thing. Just, you know, feature tends to be more dimensional, even if you're talking about hand-drawn features. Not a lot of that work right now, but, but you know, the point being, whether it's a 2D feature or a CG feature, it's, you know, generally more dimensional, and the TV stuff tends to be more flat. Now that's a lot of TV animation is becoming CG now, for better or worse. And so some of the TV pipelines are starting to look more like the feature pipeline. So it's getting a little bit blurry, but I think you know what I'm talking about. You know, there's sort of more of a flat graphic cartoony style SpongeBob or, you know, Powerpuff Girls or Samurai Jack, that kind of stuff.
Flash animation stuff.
Yeah, a lot of Flash stuff, that kind of thing. So that's going to be more flat. Now, there was a lot of overlap in my portfolios because I still would show flat graphic TV characters in my feature portfolio because look at a Pixar, one of the art of Pixar books or Sony or, you know, whatever. They still have very kind of simplistic, flat graphic, that sort of funky cartoon modern stuff all through those art of books. So the visual development process, even for a feature, is often, you know, it's still a wide range of styles that they'll work in just for fun, you know, just to kind of like explore ideas. So I still wanted to show those different graphic approaches to character design or viz dev. But the point being, you know, let's just use the character design portfolio idea. You know, I just had one that had more of my more Nickelodeon Cartoon Network stuff and then another one that had more feature stuff in it. I think the last time I really did that it was on a convention floor with a backpack full of portfolios that I was giving away to people. It was a few years ago, but I think I had 7 on me at the time. If my memory's a little bit fuzzy on it, but I think I had about 7 on me at the time, one in hand that was like, I just kind of tried to do my best well-rounded portfolio. It just had my best work in it, no matter what it was, just what I felt like was just generally the work I was the most proud of. TV, feature, character, environment didn't matter. And that was the one I carried in my hand. And then I had 3 and 3 in my backpack to give away.
Did you have like extra pages printed out for
each
portfolio or but
yeah, I had a lot. Mm-hmm. I would take a lot. The stack of prints that I had in my backpack was almost as thick as the stack of paper, you know, in the package that I would buy, you know, 20, nice. 25 or 50 sheets or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's about maybe 3/4 of an inch thick. And I would have just tons and tons of other work in there. So I just had lots to choose from. And I would even take pages that I didn't think I would use, but just in case. You just never know. Yeah, you never know. And I can remember at least one time where that actually did happen. I put in some really old work mm-hmm. because of a specific show
nice.
that I heard about that was being developed. And I was like, well, this is older work, but it's exactly the kind of characters they're looking for. And so I'm going for it.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, and I just put the older, but I wasn't embarrassed by that work. I never put anything I'm embarrassed by into the portfolio, mm-hmm. but it was stuff that just, it obviously was not as strong as my more recent work, but it was a better match.
So actually, to tie into that whole thing you were talking about, Chris, with holding your portfolio in your hand.
Right. Yeah.
Using an iPad could be a really great idea, right?
Yeah.
Because it's easy to carry around, it looks really great, and you can show multiple galleries of your work on it, right?
Yeah.
And the work will be presented in a very beautiful fashion.
Yeah, the art looks great on an iPad.
The iPad screen is beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but of course you can't give your iPad away.
Unless you're one of those people that has like 100 iPads
sitting around. Maybe you can. If you can afford that many iPads, then you probably don't need a job to just give away. So the art looks great on an iPad. And uh-huh. And yes, you can customize your galleries, but you can't give an iPad away, or you probably aren't going to give your iPad away. So I still recommend having multiple copies of your portfolio so you can hand it to the recruiter and you can go, that's yours to keep forever. You can just keep it mm-hmm. and whatever, they throw it in the trash. It doesn't matter. You are free to just give it to them in the hope that they will hang on to it. And then you don't have to deal with, like we said before, all the logistics of like, now how do we get this back to you and all that? Oh, no. Don't worry.
Yeah,
it's all
just
yours.
Keep it.
Yeah.
It's on me.
Yeah. It's on me. It's all yours. And, you know, some people recommend a leave behind, a one sheet, but I feel like why not the portfolio? I mean, it's not that much more heavy. It's the same size, 8x10-ish. So yeah, why not? Why not just give them the whole book?
Yeah.
It tells your story more effectively. And I actually think they're more likely to hold on to that than they are a single sheet of paper.
Yeah. And it's not a large, heavy book that you're dumping on them.
Right.
They'll have to keep with them and carry around
right.
on the way home.
Yeah.
So it works well for everybody. It's
yeah, cheap. Totally.
So you don't mind giving it away, but it also looks nice.
Right. But again, you can't do that with the iPad.
No.
so we recommend having those books in your bag or in your
fanny pack.
We have one final thought to share with you. Of course, our recommendation is that you would begin adapting your portfolio immediately after your first formal portfolio review. So the first encounter that you have with somebody who represents the industry that you are trying to break into, take whatever advice that you are able to apply in real time and apply it to the portfolio right away, even if that advice is nonverbal. If you're watching them, and like we already kind of mentioned earlier, if they skip past a certain page or they kind of stop on a certain page and seem indifferent about it, you know, you might take that as a cue. Now, if it's nonverbal and it's kind of ambiguous, then I would show it to someone else and see if you get that same reaction. But if they give a specific bit of feedback and you agree, then you probably would strongly consider applying that feedback right away.
Yeah. But what's even better is that you can show your portfolio to people who aren't just reviewers, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can show it to your peers and even strangers at the convention and watch how they react.
Yeah. So when you arrive, just start showing your portfolio around to anyone who would be willing to look. And everybody's curious.
Yeah, you know, got a huge pool of people who aren't biased, right?
Yeah. And oftentimes you're waiting in line for a portfolio review. So you can get everybody around you and I find it really enlightening too, to look at everyone's portfolio. You know, you get ideas that you can kind of ethically, it can inspire you to come up with your own ideas for your portfolio. Obviously we're not saying steal anyone's ideas. That'd be horrible, but you know, there are ethical ways to sort of draw inspiration from what other people are doing, or just even being inspired to think about your portfolio in unique and original ways. That's just fun. Also, it helps you to kind of evaluate where you stand.
Yeah.
There's real value in that sobering moment where you realize like, oh, wow, my figure drawings are not as strong as that person. You know, Melissa Manwill, she was showing her portfolio around at CTNX last year. And I actually wrote about her in a blog post called something like 7 Standout Viz Dev Artists That I Met at CTNX or something like that. But the point is, she just was just blowing people away left and right. And her portfolio was mostly drawings, you know, and people were just going crazy for it. And there's something challenging, intimidating, and inspiring about that kind of encounter. So anyway, all this is to say, you can make adjustments based on all of this verbal and nonverbal information right out of the gate, even before you have your first encounter with someone who maybe more formally represents an animation studio or a game studio or wherever you're applying.
Yeah. Now, of course, there is something to take into consideration, and that's that the general crowd is going to be a different sort of audience than the recruiters that you're targeting, right?
Yeah.
So like a general viewer may pause on a piece simply because it's fan art of something they're interested in and not necessarily because it's a better piece, whereas the recruiter is evaluating you based on a different, more specific criteria.
And a recruiter might geek out about a piece of fan art also, but it doesn't mean that it's sending the same message. Maybe it's sending the message, oh, look, we have something in common. You're more likely to remember me now because we both love Sailor Moon or whatever. But what Edge said, you did a better job than I did just explaining that. You know, it's not the same. So you just have to weigh that feedback, verbal or nonverbal. You have to weigh that differently, and you have to consider the audience. You have to consider their level of experience, and understand that ultimately they're not the ones that are going to be hiring you today, right? Yeah. Unless, of course, they are. Unless, of course, you just encounter someone in an informal way and they happen to be a recruiter or something. That that is that possibility exists. And at a place like CTNX, and as I understand it, GDC or other kinds of conventions or SIGGRAPH, it's very likely that you'll be in a conversation with someone. You're talking about your work. You're even maybe even showing your art, and then you find out like, oh, they actually have some authority.
Yeah, exactly.
So that might happen, but anyway, the point being, take extra time and take pause before you go applying feedback from somebody who isn't your kind of main audience. And your main audience at a convention or job fair, when you're trying to get a job in animation or games or something else, are obviously the people who work for the companies, you know, where you're trying to work. But there's still valuable information in those exchanges that you have with other people, and especially the sort of vote aspect of it. If lots of people just blast past a particular image and everyone kind of collectively seems indifferent to it, that is really valuable. It's really valuable to be able to do that. And, you know, actually, now that I'm saying this out loud, I think too, when I show people my work, it doesn't matter who's looking at it. Even my mom. Yes. You know, there's all this talk about like your mom
don't
should,
show your mom.
Right.
She's your biggest fan.
Exactly. Yeah. Your mom's just going to tell you it's great. The minute I see someone else looking at my work, I see my work differently, no matter who it is.
Yeah.
No matter who it is. And
so
that's strange. That's why is that? But
like as soon as you hand it over to someone else, suddenly all your mistakes become clear. And it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I see it all. It's really interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, So no matter what, practice portfolio reviews are going to be valuable. You just have to be careful to make sure you're evaluating that feedback, verbal or nonverbal, as accurately as possible. You know, don't try and apply or adapt to everything everybody tells you, because, you know, there's a huge amount of subjectivity to this. And the circle of trust, that is one way to really survive that and thrive in spite of the confusion. When in doubt, ask your circle of trust what they think and get them to help you filter that information. So Edge, what's the key?
So the key here is don't assume that the common practices are always the best practices.
Yes.
You should always look for ethical ways to make the most of an opportunity.
Conventions, for example, are amazing opportunities to meet key people in the industry to which you're aspiring to work and obtain valuable feedback that you can put to use in real time. But this whole concept of the flexible portfolio, the adaptive portfolio, came from my habit of questioning the common practices and not just taking it for granted that this is how it's done. And, you know, maybe I'm not the first person to think of the flexible portfolio, the adaptive portfolio, but nonetheless, I was the first person I knew that thought of it, and all that just came out of not just taking it for granted that this is how we do portfolios.
Question the status quo.
Yeah. Thank you, friends, for listening to Escape from Art Jail and for supporting the Oatly Academy through your subscription to the Backstage Pass. We literally could not do this without you, and we deeply appreciate it. And again, I hope we are helping to make your escape from art jail more effective and more efficient, and helping to hasten its arrival.
Yes.
Please share your questions with us. Just visit oatlyacademy.com/forums. Scroll down to the Backstage Pass section and you will see the Escape from Art Jail Q&A thread. And just go post any questions having to do with any of the topics that we cover here on Escape from Art Jail: money, social media, running your creative business, clients, contracts, taxes, all the stuff. Anything having to do with the business side of art. Please post your questions there.
Yeah, we get some of our best ideas from the seriously amazing questions that you guys share with us. And we really appreciate you taking the time to do that. And if there's anything in this episode that you wanted to expand upon, or you disagree with, or you have, you know, tips you want to share, please share those thoughts at oatlyacademy.com/EAJ5.
And next on Escape from Art Jail, why rage deleting your Facebook account is probably a bad idea.
Seriously bad idea.
I'm looking forward to that one.
Me too.
I already have my ranting hat on.
I have all my ranting pants on. I have more than one pair of ranting pants.
And you just wore them all?
Just put them all on.
Escape from Art Jail is a production of the Oatly Academy of Visual Storytelling. I'm your host, Chris Oatly, and my co-host is Ejua Ebeneba. Anya Marcos is our production manager, and our editor is Kevin Chandler. Our theme music is by Biju, and our closing credits music is by Smoked Meat Fax Machine. Find more art and story podcasts featuring insights from some of the most inspiring voices in animation, games, VFX, comics, and children's books at oatlyacademy.com/shows. Well, friends, that brings us to the end of our premiere episode of Escape from Art Jail. I certainly hope you found it inspiring and informative. Just a quick reminder, you can go to oatlyacademy.com/EAJ5 and share your thoughts on this episode in the comments section. We would love to hear what you think of the show. And feel free to post any follow-up questions or questions that you'd like us to answer on a future episode. Again, you can go to oatlyacademy.com/BSPN and join the notification list, and we will email you as soon as the Backstage Pass becomes available. Launch date is currently scheduled for November 10th, 2015. And if you go to that link after November 10th, after the Backstage Pass has launched, you'll just be redirected to the enrollment page for the Backstage Pass. Thanks again to Team OA for your hard work in making the Backstage Pass a reality, especially Edge, Anya, Kevin, and Don, and you, my friends, for making all this possible. We literally could not do it without you. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. The ArtCast will be back in 2 weeks with an epic interview with Armand Serrano. And of course, we hope to see you backstage at the Oatly Academy on November 10th.
We're assuming they bought the iPads, though.
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly.
Stole it.
Yeah, you could. That's it. And then you will go to real jail instead of art jail. You'll go to real jail.
This is a great plan.
And we can't help you with that. We
can't help you escape from real jail.
That is outside the realm of our expertise.